So I'll just introduce myself. I'm Wendy Means, and I'm an occupational therapist here at Sunnyhill. And I'm on the positioning and mobility team, as well as the school-based teams. And I'm also on the PICRAC committee, and it has quite an acronym. It's the Pacific Infant and Child Restraint Advisory Committee. And so for 2 years, I've been on that, just answering calls around British Columbia, answering questions I can, and gathering help from the other therapists around here as well. And I know there's a wealth of knowledge here, so I want you to share your ideas as well, but we're because it's a telehealth session, I'll try and go through the presentation, and then if you have comments or questions, if you could try and save it to the end, unless it's a burning question, and then we'll try and answer it as we'll try and make it interactive as we can. So that's it. Okay, so what I'm going to be going through today. Let's hope all this works. There it goes. Okay, so we're just going to be going through, Transport Canada just recently put together a best practice guide for working with children with special needs, and most of the content on the presentation will be going through that because it was just put together this year, and there was feedback from all over the country on it, and I was part of those sessions, so it's a really good document, and I wish it was on their site, but it's not on the Transport Canada site yet, but it will be on their website in the next month or so. So legislation and regulations, a little bit about conventional safety seats, seatbelt exemptions, production safety seats, and custom safety seats. So those, and I'm using the terms that Transport Canada is using, so I'll explain what those terms mean as we go along. Okay. So I'll just talk a little bit about the guide. So as I said, it was put together this year. They started in the spring, and then they just finished it off. And they're in the process right now of translating it, so that's why it's not on their website yet. And I think I've covered most of the things. I'm just going to highlight things from it. So if you have questions throughout, then we can... We'll go through that. Now, I know there's some people listening in other provinces. I think it's just Alberta and Nunavik. Okay. I'm going to talk about some new legislation that's come up in BC as well just this year. So sorry to the other provinces. You'll have to look at... your own legislation for some of those specific things that I'm talking about. That's great. Okay. So the guide goes through legislation and regulatory requirements, as I said already, and it also talks about, it has a whole list of different child restraint systems available in Canada, and I'm not going to talk too much about products, but I brought a few just to show you some examples of things today, because it always changes, right? The car seats are always changing, so I'll just highlight a few examples and demonstrate some of the things that I'm talking about. Now the other thing is child restraint. Using the word restraint is sometimes in healthcare, but we're starting to try and get away from that word. But in the transportation world, it's still, they still use child restraint system, and that means a child safety seat or a car seat. So throughout the presentation, I've tried to not use the word restraint, but it is something that, in the transportation world, they're still using. So, but they have received that feedback, and they're starting to try and change that, hopefully. There was quite a lot of debate when you have a lot of therapists from all over the provinces on the phone, and they're all talking about terms, and as you can imagine. Okay. So I'm not going to spend too much time on legislation and regulations because I want to make this more of a practical session. And I know it's the end of the day and I don't want to put you all to sleep, but it is important to talk a little bit about it. So there's laws regarding car seat use, and they differ in each of the provinces and territories. But I want you to remember that legislation is a minimum requirement, and that we also need to look at the best practices, and we need to share ideas and combine that together with the law. So make sure that we're going through the regulations, that we need to, you know about the regulations, but also there's best practice to think about. And so one of the things I wanted to highlight is some of the car seats will have, they all have height and weight stipulations, but they also have an age. But for the kids that we're working with disabilities, that we need to think about height and weight as most important, and not necessarily the age. So a lot of the kids we work with, you know, they might have developmental delay, they might be smaller for their size or larger for their size. So you don't want to think about age as much. Okay. So the Canadian Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, CMVSS is the acronym, they govern the importation and the manufacture of child safety seats in Canada. So every seat, car seat, and it's listed there on your slide, needs to have a national safety mark with a CMVSS number, manufacturer number, the date of manufacture, the model number, height and weight requirements, and instructions for use and warnings. Now, they don't stipulate the length of time that a safety seat can be used, but a lot of the manufacturers are now putting an expiry date on there, so that's great. It's not something that they have to do, but they are starting to do that. If you are going to be using a used system, then you have to make sure that you know the history of the restraint, that it hasn't been in a car accident before, and you just want to make sure it's not missing any parts, and that you have to have the installation instructions as well. That's very important for, you know, to follow all the regulations for that. So I'm just going to be going through different types of safety seats. So we have conventional ones with seatbelt exemptions, production safety seats, and custom safety seats. So I'm going to go through the whole range, because that's sort of what the guide went through as well. So we'll start with simple and go to complex. And hopefully I'll be able to answer most of the questions that were sent to me. Some of the sites sent some questions, so I'll try and answer them in the body of the presentation. And if any of the telehealth sites have questions afterwards, they can email me, and it's on your PowerPoint, my email address. That'd be great. I want you to feel part of it as well. Okay, so let's start with commercially available child car seats. So they call it conventional. This is infant and child car seats. And so children need to be able to bend and flex at the hip when they're seated. They need to maintain their respiration in upright or semi-upright position, and they need to be able to maintain their head and neck control if they're over 22 pounds, if you're going to be using a regular car seat. Okay, so stage one is for infants, and it's rear facing, and it's for infants to 1 year up to 22 pounds. So rear facing is the safest option for an infant, since most crashes are frontal. So the seat back of the car will protect the child's head, neck, and spine. And you want it to be placed in the center position, if possible, of the vehicle, because that is the best place for the child to be. Okay, and I'll be showing an example later of one of those. So stage two is forward facing, and that's 22 pounds to 40 pounds, or 1 to about 4.5 years of age. And as of May 2007, good news that this stage has been expanded to 65 pounds. So that's just something that just came about. And so a lot of the manufacturers are frantically now trying to test their car seats and make them so that they can go up to 65 pounds. So I've received tons of calls on this. It doesn't mean that you can use an existing car seat. It has to be with the new sticker, and it has to say up to 65 pounds, because I've been getting a lot of calls of people saying, can we just use our regular car seat now to that? And that's not not how it works. So there's two companies that have actually got really quickly responded to this. So one is the Britex Marathon, and I'll show that one later, and the Radian by Sunshine Kids. So those are two now that go up to 65 pounds forward facing. So yeah, it was great that they responded so quickly to that. Okay, so stage three is the booster seat, and so this is best practices for about 4.5 to their 9th birthday. So on the posters you'll see 4 to 8, but it's really up until their 9th birthday, so it's that entire year as well. So that's 40 to 80 pounds, and as of July 2008, there's new regulations in BC that will require the use of booster seats until their 9th birthday. So they're going to be legislated as of July 1st, 2008 in the province of BC. I'm not sure what other provinces have this legislated. I know Ontario's already done this. I don't know if anybody knows of any other provinces that this legislation exists. If you are in other provinces and that legislation doesn't exist, a lot of research shows that it is the best practice for a child between the ages of 4 and 8 or up to their 9th birthday to be in a booster seat. So if you can encourage your clients still, you know, to use them, it's really good practice. Now, Boost BC has started, you know, with car seat. So they have a whole bunch of ads that they've put together, and they have a booster club that they can join and certificates. And so if you go onto that website, you can download a lot of that. And they have education for schools now, and you'll see posters around Sunny Hill that we have up for it. Okay. Great. Thank you. Thanks. Okay, so next I'm going to go into options for children with special needs. So we're going to go through seatbelt exemptions, production safety seats, and custom safety seats. I'm going to try not to talk about, I'm not really going to talk about different diagnoses because there's so many. I'm going to talk more in broad terms, and hopefully you can apply the strategies to most of the kids that you work with. So that's the aim. So we'll start with the seatbelt exemption, and this is the last resort, but I just thought I'd start with this, but it's the last resort, really, is the seatbelt exemption, is when you can't use the seatbelt system at all, and a form needs to be filled out by a legally qualified medical practitioner certifying that due to physical characteristics or medical reasons, they're unable to wear a seatbelt assembly for a stated period of time, and that's the important thing, too, that it is a stated period of time, and they're hoping that it's a temporary thing that doesn't have to be for a long time. And those forms can be ordered from Transfer Canada. We've had a little bit of a hard time getting them lately, but we have some on the way. They are carbon copied, but we do have copies of them here if you need to send you one. Okay, so let's go into production restraints. And this is intended for children who are either under or over recommended height or weight requirements of conventional child restraint systems, or who have medical conditions that impact on their use. So you'll see, I was hoping I was going to have an example of one of these, but they're hard to get your hands on. This is a picture of a car bed. So this is a production restraint for an infant. And car beds should only be used if the option of the rear-facing car seat is not suitable for an infant. So rule of thumb, always try with the commercially available products first and then go to, you know, more of a system like this. It can be used for smaller premature infants that need to travel lying down. And a lot of the times it has to do with respiration, that they need to be in a prone or supine position when they're traveling. So you want to place it in a flat position, of course, along the vehicle's back seat, and you want the head of the infant to be in the center when you're placing it in the car, because that is the safest spot. But just to say, I just wanted to add in that it's not as safe as a rear-facing car seat. This, you know, is putting infants more at risk, but it's better than the alternative, which is no solution. So Yeah, I was hoping to have one to show you. There's the only one we can use in Canada is called Dorel Costco's Dream Ride. And it's the only one that's certified in Canada to be used. It is a little bit harder to find. I know, I'm not sure if there's some people from Children's here. I think they're also listening in. But they have one that can be loaned out. And also TDA's on Marine Drive in this area, they have, they can order it in. So you just have to give them a little bit of warning. They try and usually have one that they have in stock, but of course when I needed it for this, they didn't. So it's best to give them a little bit of warning to order it in, but they can order it in. But then they would have to, the parents would have to purchase it. Yeah. So car beds can be suitable for infants, for example, that are less than 37 weeks gestation. They are low birth weight. They might have a cast, musculoskeletal or health conditions, or they're requiring a prone or supine position. Okay. So production car seats for older children. Sometimes the kids that we work with need a higher weight, and they still need to be in a forward-facing car seat. So we do have one here. It's a bit old, but it's one we can show, and it's the Columbia, and it goes to 20 to 105 pounds. Thank you, babe. You can just stay there. So yeah, this is an old version of it, but sometimes it has, they do have more padding, and then it has goes for the higher height as well. Oh, this is one of our older versions. I couldn't find a newer version around. So we can't actually use this one because it doesn't have its proper sticker, everything. But no, it's just to show you an example. Thanks. Let's see. It's a bit heavy too. Okay, so we're going to go into custom safety seats now, and that's any modification to a conventional or production restraint system. And so any custom safety system requires the documentation that I have included in your handouts. So hopefully all the telehealth sites have this. If you could pull out this separate sheet, I'm just going to go through this. Yeah. Everybody have a copy of it? There's a few up here if you don't. Okay, so I just included this, and I didn't want to put it on a slide because it's just too much to take in at the end of the day. But basically, these are the things that are all required in order to use a custom restraint. And the vendors don't know a lot of this information, so sometimes it takes us to ensure that all of this is in place. But you need a statement that the system is to be used by only that person, so that's very important. You need the name of the company that manufactured or sold the system. You need the date of manufacture of the system. Then I'll just sort of breeze through some of the most important things. So it's not designed to be used with trays or tables or certain webbing assemblies. And then the other important thing is, just trying to highlight a few things here. Yeah, those are most of the things there that we've talked about. And what I know what Children's Hospital has done is they've actually have a form that they filled out, and you just fill in the blanks when you're doing a custom restraint. Has anyone here had to do custom restraint with any of these? What was your experience with that? Yeah, like did you use a form, or did you just make sure that it? Yeah. I'll just repeat that one of the therapists here got one of their doctors to write a letter that it's for a specific child with a specific diagnosis and why they needed it. So yeah, and it's very important also to have the manufacturer, like, need to have the vendor, like, who sold them the equipment and that. So anyways, hopefully. Okay, so now I'm going to go into another custom restraint. One of them that is under custom restraint is the Easy On Vest. And this is used for kids with physical difficulties, developmental behavioral difficulties, poor trunk control, and certain types of CAS. And it starts from 2 years of age or older, and it's for kids weighing 20 to 160 pounds. And if it's any kids between 80 and 160 pounds, this is really important because this is something new we've just found out, that they need a heavy-duty tether kit. So if they are between 80 and 160 pounds, they need the heavy-duty tether kit and need to make sure that the device comes with that. So if I come over here, still be able to see me. So this is just an example of one that we have here. I don't know if you can see that. So in the back, it has a zipper that does up. I'm not going to try and put it on over my belly. But yeah, basically it tethers into the car, and you can put this on the child, in the house. And it's not as easily, we do have some kids that are Houdinis, but most kids can't undo it because it does up in the back. So that's one type. There's other types of Easy On Vests. So the modified, there's just some pictures there if I didn't have an example. Okay, and then the modified safety vest, and that is for kids that need to be lying down. So I don't have a picture of that, but yeah, so if kids need to be lying down, like for example, if they have a cast, something like that, then you can use the modified safety vest. And it goes from 20 to 100 pounds. And for children that are over 76 centimeters, two seat belts are required to attach it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? It was only until
60 pounds. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I put the website at the back of your resources. I think it's EaseOn. What is it? Actually, I don't know if I added that one, but I can email that one out. But yeah, the one that I went on had, you know, the different ones that you could order. And Motion Specialties in our area is able to bring them in. Perry Rand is the person that brings them into Canada from the States, and they're in the East Coast. And a lot of people have had difficulties getting the Easy On Vest now. So we had Transport Canada call over, and now we seem to be getting them. So that's great. So if you are having troubles accessing them in your area, just make sure that, call Transport Canada. Barbara Baines is the person to call, and she seems to make things happen. So, because she wasn't aware that this was happening. So I also wanted to talk a little bit about the Q-Vest. I don't know if someone has a question out there. Yeah, okay, just was getting some feedback. So I wanted to talk about the Q-Vest as well. And what was happening is some of the therapists are finding that some companies are bringing in the Q-Vest because they weren't able to get the Easy On Vest. And when we talked to Transport Canada, they said that the Q-Vest cannot be used in Canada. It is not approved. And they do not condone using it. It's not, it doesn't have the, people are talking. Yeah, let's keep going. Yeah. So, and it's also only been tested on buses in the States. So they're using it on buses. So it's not even tested in vehicles. So it's really, if you're in an area where a vendor is bringing them in, you shouldn't be prescribing them to your clients. We had that situation a little while ago because we weren't able to get these Easy On Vests. So sometimes you're scrambling for something. But okay, so best practices for premature infants or low weight, so born less than 37 weeks gestation. So you want to select an infant car seat with the following features, and I'll just get my helper here to bring one up. I didn't want to do a lot of lifting, so thanks. It's quite heavy. Okay, so I actually took my tape measure and went over to TJ's to try and find a car seat that fits this criteria. And it is harder to find, but you want to find one with, well, the five-point harness. So all of them have the five-point. Hopefully all of them now have the five-point harness. And you want a distance of less than 5.5 inches from the crotch strap to the seat back. So you can see this one. Can you see there? That's a really tiny distance there. Can you see it okay there? And then you also want a really short distance here where the shoulder straps are. So less than 6 inches. So this one is the, I think it's the SIP Peg Prego was the one that I found. And please let me know if you found another one because I was taking my tape measure to all the car seats, so this is the one that I found at TJ's, but you might have found one also that that fits that criteria. Okay, and you also want the ability to, now they say recline 45 degrees, but we know as seating therapists that's really tilt. You're not doing recline, you're doing the tilt. You want it to be able to do that. Okay. Now, some things that you can do is you can add blanket rolls or towels. Do we have those? Oh, they're there. Thanks. Okay, so you don't want to be adding anything underneath the babies. You can only add things on the sides. So you can roll up towels and put them on the sides of the infant, but you're not allowed to put them behind them because then you're affecting how the car seat works. And you also want to avoid wrapping the babies in like large blankets and big jackets. I know it's harder in the winter, especially in some colder areas, but you want to try and reduce that as much as you can because it's just going to affect how the car seat works. Okay, and you also want to ensure that the shoulder straps for the harness are below the infant shoulders and that you position the chest clip at the armpit level. Okay, so for kids that are medically fragile, it's really important that any medical equipment is secured in the event of a crash. I have David here if anyone has questions about that, but has anyone run into those issues before? Yeah, there we go. That's why I have David here.
I'm not sure. We've done mounting of oxygen tanks and things like that to wheelchairs and strollers and done it that way, but never really mounting directly to the car. But I think it would be like any equipment in the car. You don't want it flying around in the case of an accident because someone would get hurt, and you also don't want to damage the equipment if in a normal, non-accident situation. So it's a good question. I mean, there are lots of straps and tethers and things out there, like a Canadian Tire, for instance, and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that's something you've got to work on.
Yeah, because they do suggest that it needs to be secure. Thank you. That's great. And the other thing that we were also talking about with that is, I mean, you want to anchor the equipment, but you also want it, you may need to access it in the event of an emergency, so you don't want to put it too far away, right? You don't want to hide it. So you want to make sure that you can access it as well. Okay, so best practices for children with decreased head control. So, you want to just make sure that the head is supported. So they suggest that soft collars are better than stiff collars or head straps, which could cause neck injuries in a crash. And that you want to, of course, make sure that the collar is not attached to the vehicle or to the wheelchair. It's just a soft collar that they'd be wearing. And the positioning and mobility team here, we've just met recently with Orthodynamics to try and come up with better designs for some of the neck collars, because some of the ones that are out there right now are quite cumbersome, and it would be difficult to fit into a car seat, so you have to keep that in mind as well. Okay, and then, of course, you want to choose a car seat that I think most of them have the ability to tilt now, most of the car seats, but you just want to make sure that you have one. And then, again, you can use padding on the sides of the head or the body to support. Okay. So children with low or high muscle tones, so sliding or thrusting, that's an issue that comes up a lot, I imagine. So again, you can place a folded towel between the child and the crop chop to fill the excess space. And you can also place a rolled towel under the child's knees to increase the hip flexion so that they're in the system better. But you don't want to, again, place anything under the pelvis or behind the child. Good rule of thumb. Now we have some fun pictures here. So I get a lot of calls about kids with hip spica, casts, or brace. And the options are unfortunately limited right now, but they're working on it. The spell cast car seat isn't manufactured anymore, and it was the one that was most often used. So since 2005, it hasn't been manufactured. So I know that Children's Hospital has one that they loan out, but it's in high demand, as you can imagine. So you just want to make sure if you are using a used one that's in good condition, you know the history, and then it's under 10 years old. And then it hasn't been in an accident, of course. Yeah, the Britex Hippo is another one that's coming up on the market, and it's waiting for its crash testing to be able to be used. It's approved. But now we're going to get the mowing the lawn in the rain. But, it's awaiting crash testing. So that's the Britex Hippo. So, and I know that Children's has written a letter to try and get that process going quicker. So hopefully it will be, we'll be here soon. And right on cue, here comes David with the radiant car seat. So this is one that that Children's has actually been trialing in and has some success with. If you just want to bring the other one up too, and I can just show the example. So this is the radiant car seat, and you can see that the sides are lower here. So for some kids, can you see it okay? Stand up if you can. But for some kids, you might be able to place rolled towels underneath, and then their legs can go up over those sides. So you can see the difference. This is a marathon. I know it's terrible colors, but I just you can get this one in neutral as well. But I wanted to bring this one along just to show you that this is the other one that goes up to 65 pounds now for forward facing. So these are the two that you can use right now. You can see that the sides are a lot higher in a regular one, and the sides are lower here. So for some kids, this might work, and it's worth a try. So those are the options right now. They're fairly limited, but they're cute. It's great. Great. Okay, so children with a leg cast, so for example, if they have a full length cast, you want to ensure, like, first rule of thumb, as I've been saying all the way along, is try a conventional restraint. And if that doesn't work, if the child, you know, can't sit upright, then you can try the easy on vest with them lying down. And you want to ensure that the cast is at the back of the vehicle seat, so it's along the back of the vehicle seat for safety. Now, I know, Trish, you had a question about osteogenesis imperfecta. So that's a condition where the bones break more easily. And all I can say for that is try the conventional restraints and try and find one, I was going to say with more padding, but if in a high impact collision, you're not going to be able to stop children from getting a broken bone. Yeah, that's good. So children with tracheostomy, so you want to avoid trays and shields that may come in contact with the tracheotomy. You want to choose a safety seat that can be semi-reclined so that the head can be positioned back and so that the chin doesn't get a cover up. And you also want to secure the medical equipment. And batteries should have enough power for double the length of trip just in case, you know, something happens. Traffic or an accident or something happens like that. Okay, so children with feeding tubes. So you want to make sure that the harness system doesn't rub against the feeding tube. And just when you're putting on the harness system, you want to make sure that it's not rubbing or pulling the site. And I know here we've made some gurneys for kids that cover over the site, and mainly that's used in bed, but it could be an idea that could be used in a car if it's getting in the way of the harness system. Yeah. Okay. There's a lovely picture. It was hard to find pictures of all of these things. That I always think a picture tells a thousand words. But so a child with a halo brace. I know Corey over at Children's Hospital has come up with a great booklet that talks all about the halo brace. So I'm hoping to get a copy that we'll have here soon. She's just in the final stages of it. But basically, you want to treat the halo brace like it's all part of the child. So you want to thread the shoulder straps through the halo between the outside bars and the neck. And you want to keep a pair of scissors handy. I thought this was an interesting tip. Just keep a pair of scissors handy to cut the webbing in an emergency. Yeah, and you also, of course, want to look for a car seat that will fit the halo system as well, because for some of them, they are quite large and very difficult to deal with. So, I mean, in that case, they say sometimes you might have to use an ambulance if you're not able to come up with another solution.
So how would that work? The shoulder and the other strap are connected
together. Yeah, you put it through the bars, so... Oh, this is the lap belt. Yeah, this shoulder belt of the car you're putting through. But you have to put it through first, and then it attaches in the front still. So if it's coming from, say, the top like this, then you're putting it through, and then you're attaching it. So you don't want it on either side of the child. You want it through the bars. Does that make sense?
No.
No, it doesn't? Oh, okay. No, it doesn't?
The shoulder belt from the lap belt.
Yeah, it's all one piece. Yeah, so I'm trying to picture. Does anyone have any insights on how this? I haven't actually had to do it before. This is just the guidelines that they've given. Anyone out there? And what's that? Sorry? Oh, yeah, I know. Just trying to visualize it. I was kind of visualizing it coming from the top, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Well, I'll ask Corey over at Children's. Hopefully, I don't know if she's listening right now, but she might be over there. But yeah, okay, that's good. This is the guidelines that they've laid out, so we'll try and get a picture of how they do it. Yeah, that would be good because it sounds complicated. Yeah, it does. Yeah. Okay, so just a few more that we're going to talk about, and then we're almost done. So best practices for children with behavioral issues. So we've talked already about using the Easy On Vest with the rear back zippers. And then also there is commercially available guards that go over the seatbelt buckle. Those don't always work for all kids because some of them are smart enough to figure out how to open those, but they need to be opened with like a pen or something thin. So for some kids they work, but a lot of times we have to go to the Easy On Vest in that type of situation. So I get a lot of calls about that too. So I just want to talk a little bit about things not to do when you're working with safety seats. So you don't want to do anything against the manufacturer's instructions. You don't want to poke any holes, drill into, or cut the shell, because then you're getting into custom restraint, because then you're avoiding the safety standards. And for the seatbelt straps, you don't want to add anything. You don't want to cut them or change them or re-sew, anything like that. So, you want to do the best that you can not to do any of these things. And I know in some situations we have to, and then you have to make sure that you have the appropriate documentation for a custom seat. Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to touch a little bit about traveling in a wheelchair in a vehicle. I did have some questions about traveling in a bus, but I didn't want to go into all of that because the manual actually didn't talk. They just talked about personal vehicles. They didn't go into all the guidelines around buses. But if for a child, again, it's best if they can travel in a child restraint or a child safety seat. If they can't and they need to travel, travel in their wheelchair, then it needs to be in a forward-facing, upright position. You need 4-point tie-down devices attached to the mainframe of the wheelchair and the vehicle. The vehicle shoulder lap belt needs to be used. The brakes need to be on, the tray removed. For a power wheelchair, you want to make sure that the power is turned off, but you also want to make sure that it's not in push mode. You know what I mean? So with the gears, you want to make sure it's still in drive mode, because some people do push them up the ramp, and then you have to turn the gears back into drive mode so then the brakes are on in the chair. Someone had a question about using tilt wheelchairs. So it's best to have the tilt wheelchair as upright as possible. And they say 30 degrees from upright or less is the best possible, is best practice. If the child can tolerate that, I know not all kids can tolerate that. I see people nodding their heads. Yeah, that was the main thing with tilt. And you want to make sure that the tilt is locked out so that the pins are in, so that the tilt can't be changed. Yeah, I think those are the main things with the wheelchair. Does anybody have anything else to add for traveling in a wheelchair? Yeah, Lillian. Yeah, you can use the soft colors, yeah, in the system. And you also have to remember that if a child is wearing their harness, it's actually not, I mean, you still need to use the vehicle seat as well, because, you know, if you're using the Dynaform, for example, that's not tested for crash testing. So it's a positioning, it's for their positioning, it's not for, because I had a question about someone asking that they were actually going onto a bus and the bus driver was all upset that they weren't wearing, you know, a Dynaform. And we suggest it's great for positioning, but it's not something that is crash tested. So in the event of a crash, it's, you know, it's not going to be the thing that's going to stop them from getting injured. What's that? Oh, yes. That's the other thing. Yes, you have to make sure that it's really important that they have a head support on. And they do suggest that it's not the type of head support that they're attached to them. Yeah, so that's one thing they suggest, which is tricky if you're trying to get them upright and their head is falling forward. Yeah, did you want... have the harness.
I can imagine
because not all kids need them for positioning. We do suggest it's, you know, if they are traveling in vehicle, is good practice, you know, you need to have the headrest, and it's good practice to have the harness, but yeah, I don't know. I guess if the school is saying that they have to, then, you know, all we can say is that they're not crash tested. It's not for transportation. It's for positioning.
There isn't.
Transport Canada doesn't have anything like that in there. And some people think that it is. It's a myth. Yeah. There's no law. It's not a regulation. These are best practice guidelines. It's not a regulation that they have to have it. But for, I mean, we say the headrest is the most important, and then the harness is just for positioning, right? So, but I mean, it's good practice for them all to have it on. When it's a minor crash, it might help a little bit, but it's not regulated or, you know, and it's a myth out there that it is. Yeah. Did I repeat that enough for the telehealth sites? Okay. So just to conclude, and then hopefully we can share our ideas, take the least intervention approach possible. Where possible, use commercially available products. Before you prescribe it, try it, because some of these systems aren't going to fit in certain vehicles. Educate your families as much as you can about safety and document everything that you're doing and all the education you've done to the family. Make sure it's all documented just in case you need to access it for legal purposes. So I've added some websites that are good in your package. So the Transport Canada website is the first one. And Safe Kids Canada is really good as well. They have all kinds of information for keeping kids safe. Safe Ride News, they put on a bi-monthly publication that is really good. And then, of course, ICBC has some good things as well. Great.